From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're listening to Mind Medicine. Mind Medicine. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine program, the second half. I love being with you. I love talking with you. I love talking with our guests. And I'm Charles Coves, your host. I'm Australasia's passion provocateur. And I'll shortly be introducing my guest for the second hour, Viros Pereira, a wonderful man with an amazing life story and doing some wonderful work. But I'll come back to him in a moment. This show is run in association with Mind Medicine Australia. And this charity is Australia's leading not-for-profit, working on the use of medicinal psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies to treat a range of mental illnesses. Mind Medicine Australia exists to help alleviate the suffering caused by our accelerating mental illness epidemic in Australia through expanding treatment options available to medical practitioners and their patients. At the top of the first hour, I told you about the first ever certificate in psychedelic therapies in the Southern Hemisphere that MMA has established. And its website is mindmedicineaustralia.org.au. But on top of that, recently Australia's TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, has started granting approvals through Special Access Scheme B for psilocybin and MDMA-assisted therapies for patients on a case-by-case basis, and is considering rescheduling applications for psilocybin and MDMA from Schedule 9, prohibited, to Schedule 8, controlled medicine. Over the last 4 years, MMA has built awareness by presenting to governments, regulators, politicians, medical professionals, and members of the public, provided free access to leading researchers from around the world through a regular global webinar and podcast series, launched Australia's first book of psychedelic healing stories, organised a major international summit with leading researchers and other practitioners in this field from around the world, developed a leading therapist training course, the first of its kind in the Southern Hemisphere, and additional professional development programs. It's collaborated on the establishment of a centre of excellence in psychedelic-assisted therapies. It's called the Neuromedicines Discovery Centre at Monash University, the first one in Australia. It has successfully lobbied the federal government to provide $15 million of grants for psychedelic research, developed a campaign to have these medicines rescheduled, secured medicine supplies, and announced the largest psychedelic-assisted therapy trial in Australia. The recent COVID scamdemic has exacerbated Australia's mental health epidemic, and these treatments being supported and promoted by Mind Medicine Australia have the potential to cure millions of people in Australia and all around the world who are suffering unnecessarily. So please check out the website, mindmedicineaustralia.org.au. This show is all about provoking new ways about thinking about your life. It's about mental health. It's about health issues of all descriptions. And Viros Pereira has got some insights on why we should support mental health issues. I'm also on about passion and wanting you to understand the benefits for your life when you are pursuing your passion. I say that you will be mentally healthier and healthier generally if you are pursuing your passion. Now, before I come to Viros, I just want to raise a couple of points on the editorial. I was Patrick Henningsen's comment on Elon Musk and what he might do to these Twitter employees. It reminds me of this question of entitlement. Workers who think they're entitled to a job. And it's such a socialist, communist idea. My parents came to Australia from Hungary. They left the country they loved in 1949 to come to this country to get away from socialism, to get away from communism, to get away from totalitarianism, to get away from dictators. And it's in communist countries that workers have entitlements to jobs regardless of how much value they add. I'm all in favor of every organization measuring the value that employees add and rewarding them accordingly, or getting them to go somewhere else where they can pursue their passion. The tragedy in Australia and the tragedy in the Western world is that most leaders do not enable their workers to be passionate. People start a new job, they're passionate, and then they start working, and then their passion gets killed because of poor, poor leadership. So please, if you want a successful business, make sure your people maintain their passion. Secondly, if they're not passionate about your work, find out why. And if they can't, if it's nothing to do with your leadership, then get them to leave, because they destroy businesses. Passionate people produce, that's my book, my first book, passionate people produce great companies. And I fight for the freedom of people to pursue their passion, and I fight for the freedom of employers to employ people who are passionate. So this is the place of passion. This is the place of freedom on TNT Radio. And I'm delighted to welcome to this hour my guest, Viros Pereira. Viros, welcome to the Mind Medicine Program.
Thank you for having me, Charles. Honestly, I'm so excited.
It's wonderful, wonderful to have you here. You are a multicultural ambassador in so many ways. You and I met some years ago through the Liberal Party, and I have to tell you, dear listeners, and we've got listeners, Viros, all around the world, so hopefully people from the subcontinent who are listening to you as well, or you'll be able to, they might be listening by recording when we send them a link on the recording. But, you know, there are people all around the world who are listening to you, to be inspired by you. And we met through the Liberal Party, and I'm a Liberal supporter for the philosophy of liberalism, but the Liberal Party in Australia has totally lost its way. So, Viros, I hope, and that's why I'm delighted to have you as a guest, because you are also a warrior for freedom. So welcome to this show, and tell us a bit about your journey that has brought you to Melbourne, Australia.
Well, my journey is pretty interesting. It's a pretty long one. I was born in a country town in Sri Lanka, and at the age of 18, I moved to London, did my higher studies there. I lived there for 10 years, and I moved to Melbourne, where I call home now, about 22 years ago. So I think I have traveled and lived and worked in three major continents. So Melbourne, when I moved here, was such a darling. I had the opportunity of staying or living in London, but I gave up and came to a beautiful place called Melbourne. We tried Sydney but didn't enjoy, but Melbourne was the place for us. So I settled down in Melbourne. So that's my journey in a nutshell. I can tell you quite a bit what I did throughout this period if you want. So that's my little
yes. No, I would. That's a wonderful summary. Thank you, and I love it. And tell our listeners what you've been doing in Melbourne over the last 22 years that you've been here. So that was in 2000 when you came here, when the Sydney Olympics were on.
Correct. That was such an amazing experience. Before that, I would like to go back to my hometown. I started my life serving the local church. So I became altar server. I'm sure a lot of people have done that. So that passion grew in me, and I started continuing that in the school. So more than academics, I think I've been a warrior for certain things. In what matters in the school, not only the education, but there are other things that matters. For a kid, I've worked hard. I've actually done a lot of sports, and tennis, athletics, so many things. So all that I've done is leadership, making sure that game is well represented and taken to the next level. So I moved to London, did the same thing. When I came to Australia, Melbourne, I saw a massive gap in the Sri Lankan community. So at a very young age, I started the first Sri Lankan newspaper. Absolutely no idea what I was going to do, but I had a passion. There was no newspaper at that time, print newspaper. So me and my, that was my ex that time. So we started a newspaper for the Sri Lankan community. That's where I started my journey in this country. And then, I've been back for 17 years. We still have just a social media person on the media. But parallel to that, I became an educator, started teaching international students business, management, and marketing. And I think most importantly, I taught them life skills, how to integrate to this society, how to enjoy this culture here. Because this is a massive community. Melbourne is not just a place. It's a community. We are belong to a beautiful community. I settled down because of that reason. I was welcomed wholeheartedly. I was invited to a barbie next door. I was invited to a beer on the bar wherever I went. But that was the experience I had. And as you said, Sydney Olympics was the best. I've been to a couple of Olympics, one in Spain as well. But there was nothing like Sydney. And we fell in love with this place. So the journey is probably for 20 years, I can write a book for what I've done, the opportunities I was given. But obviously, it's not the same now. It is not the same. The landscape changed. Why it has changed, I don't know. But the journey is amazing. I think I had a very, very good run. But I think my passion for this country is to serve and make it a better place for the next generation. And I find it very, very difficult to do that. I think, as you said, there's only very few passionate people because we don't work for money. We work for passion. We're driven by certain values of life. And that is not, it's not operating well. The people who are working hard is not given opportunity. People who are, keyboard warriors and people who are, fake profiles are getting the mileage and not doing the work. They're protecting the maybe the title or what they believe is right. So, journey is amazing, but I see my passion it's very hard to continue in this place at this point of time.
Yes, Viros, that is a very good insight. I agree with you. Melbourne is not the same. Australia is not the same. And we might talk about what that might mean. But come back to Sri Lanka. What on earth got you to move to London from Sri Lanka when you were 18 years of age?
Oh, good question, Charles. That time I was doing VC equivalent in Sri Lanka. We had a civil war. We had very limited opportunity or education facility at that time. You're talking about 1988, 1989. So Sri Lanka was a very primitive country. We didn't have all the universities that we have right now and opportunities. So the only hope that I had was to go to UK. That's the only thing that I knew that time. There was US, Australia, but for some reason I liked the UK system. So I wanted to study and move forward in my life rather than struggling in Sri Lanka. And the civil war was pretty bad for everyone. We couldn't really do our day-to-day work or study or do things. So there was no option. So I moved to London just to start a new life because we all want peace. Mental health is the peace that we need. How happy are we inside? That's what matters. So I didn't experience that at a very young age. So I was looking for peace. I'm a peaceful man and I enjoy peace and I just want to share that with other people. So that I never had it in a level that I expected from Sri Lanka. So I moved to London and then I started a life, but it was challenging too. As a young kid, a teenager that moved to London, doesn't matter what you want to do, but it's a very tough call, tough gig. No parents, just few friends and maybe uncles and aunties. So it was tough, but Sri Lanka, I moved out because of that reason.
Okay, that's very, very commendable, courageous of you. And we will continue this discussion with Virosh Pereira from Melbourne and his journey from Sri Lanka to London to Australia. I'm Charles Coves, your host on the Mind Medicine program on TNT Radio, and we'll be back after these few short messages.
Patrick Henningsen on TNT Radio.
Tighten your belt for Zelensky. Do it for freedom and democracy in the Ukraine. That's one thing we're being told. The other is we've got to basically turn off our heat for the climate. Don't pump any petrol anymore, or just wean yourself off it. Get onto the electric car, but you can't charge it because the power cuts. So it's the climate, Zelensky, Ukraine, climate, and then COVID's also lurking in the background. We're being told, there might be another wave this winter. So it's just a collection of crises, and a lot of these crises are not real crises, in my opinion. They're being amped up. They're being suspended by this machine that seems to feed off of these crises. And it's the law of diminishing returns comes to mind.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
In the ambulance, Michael says to me, "Mom, I can't breathe. I can't breathe." And so I yelled, "Help." I thought I was going to lose him. I'm in the hospital within 10 minutes. He just crashed and was put on a ventilator. They put Michael in a medically induced coma, and they give Michael a 5% chance of survival. Nothing made sense at that point. It just seemed so crazy. I mean, he was fine, and then he wasn't.
Sepsis can cause reduced blood flow, leading to severe tissue damage to arms, legs, and other extremities.
There was no saving Michael's hands or feet. They needed to do 2 upper amputations and 2 below the knee amputations.
Sepsis causes an average of 38 amputations per day in the United States. To learn more about how to avoid the devastation caused by sepsis, go to sepsis.org.
The truth is out there. All the other stations suck.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine program. I'm Charles Coves, your host, Australasia's passion provocateur. And my guest in this hour is Virosh Pereira, who's been talking about his wonderful, amazing journey from Sri Lanka to London to Australia. Now, Virosh, your story reminds me of my parents, which is one of the reasons why I'm a freedom warrior that I mentioned at the top of the hour, because my dad came here when he was 25. My mum was 16. Just imagine these two arriving, couldn't speak English, landing in this country in similar circumstances to you landing in London. So it takes a certain mindset, doesn't it, to be able to make those decisions?
Yes, 100%. Obviously, it was a part. You know, Sri Lanka is a third world country, and UK, obviously, the most established country in Europe. So going to a country, different system, different mentality, the culture is different, language, it's something that I should share with you. My first few days, I just got a job at McDonald's, and walking to McDonald's, there's a lot of Nigerian kids working there. The language is very very slang language. Every time, I mean, they talk, they just say, you know what I mean. I didn't understand what does it mean. They won't say anything. So I couldn't speak English. In top of that, I had to understand the slang that they're talking about. Obviously, it was a massive culture shock for me. And honestly, I was a very timid boy that time. I really didn't want to ask anyone a question for the second time. So I kept quiet and just kept smiling. And they thought I'm a very cool guy. Actually, inside me, I didn't understand anything. But it was such a big culture shock for me.
Wow. That's how amazing. It reminds me of a wonderful saying that I recommend to everybody. If you don't know what to say, don't say anything at all. Just smile.
100%. I wish I knew that. Only thing is I couldn't say anything. So I kept, just kept smiling. That's it. Couldn't answer. All what I said sometimes, excuse me, that's all I said. And they probably sometimes explained. I felt very bad to ask them 3-4 times because I couldn't understand the accent, thick Nigerian accent, but they're born in UK. So, I mean, it's just how a migrant will go through. There's no choice. You're not given a outline what to know, how to do things when you walk into UK. Just walk in. Just walk in and then go and get crashed in wherever, and then you learn from out of it.
Amazing. And these days, and my parents got almost literally no support. And all those migrants after the war, they were given cheap passage to come here, but they had to fend for themselves. These days, you know, and in the UK, but Australia, certainly migrants get a lot of support. But I'll be interested in your views on that. I'm going to come back to your views on Sri Lanka, because I think Sri Lanka is a wonderful example of how countries can be destroyed. I think Venezuela is another example. And if you kill the structure, and I'm concerned about Australia, I'm concerned about America and Canada. If you kill the structures for a proper functioning of a country, it won't function properly. But let's talk because my mind is going to mental health, and you have an interest in helping solve mental health problems. But can you tell us what your support is, how you like to support mental health, and we'll talk some stuff about mental health.
Firstly, I just want to just do my introduction of mental health. It's my relationship with myself. It's very lately I learned the concept. Mental health in Sri Lanka, we've never heard. Mental health in this country, it's only 5-6 years ago I started looking at it. When you say mental health, I think it's only for mentally sick people. That was my impression a long time ago. I've gone through a very, very tough time in life, even though here. Initially, I didn't have any friends, so getting or integrating with the system was very, very challenging. I was nearly walking out of this country about 15 years ago because I didn't really get the right vibe, but I put up with it. And that time, my mental health, has, if you want to use that term, is probably on the very lowest levels of life. And then about 10, 12 years ago, I went through a divorce, again, dipped down to the worst is minus. And another time is 2019 or 2020, with the lockdown, mental health went down to another level. So mental health is something that obviously we go through it. And when you know that I'm going through it and I've come out of it, and I think it's right to say we want to help at least one person not to get into the same trap, not to get into the same problem. Because I think, as you said, we are passionate. We're passionate to make a difference to people. If I'm money hungry, I'll be a millionaire somewhere. I'm on a yacht doing something else, having a glass of champagne in Hawaii. We continue to be in the forefront of this country, and we serve people not on a level that people see it, in a surface level, day to day, giving them hope, giving them what they need in life. So mental health for me is such an important thing. I don't care who you are, Charles. My job in this country is to make sure that people are happy and safe. So it doesn't matter who I see on the street, who I meet, amount of calls I get. I'm not a counselor. I'm not a established whatever title holder for something. But I get so many calls asking for help in so many things, domestic violence, employment, real estate, education. You tell me everything, because they don't have the knowledge and the experience. So they find it very difficult in life because they don't know how to do things. So then they get into other problems. So mental health is your relationship with yourself. If you have peace, if you find it that you're having a good day, I think that's what matters. I think everyone deserves to be in that space. So whoever needs my help, whoever that deserves, I'm there to help them.
So Viros, you early in your introduction, you said, hey, how happy are we on the inside? And happy and peaceful. How do you do that? Because you have been through some tough times. What are some tips that you can, oh, when someone says to you, hey, I'm not happy and I'm not at peace, what strategies do you share with them?
Let's not use a word of strategy, because strategy is very corporate. That's where a lot of people find it difficult, because we cannot follow a
yes, that's a very good point. Thank you for picking me up on that. I agree. Even as I said the word strategy, I thought, gosh, that's not a very good word to use. Well done.
Charles, I just want to say, bro, let's catch up for a drink. Let's catch up for a coffee. So that is the way we should approach mental health. Somebody's struggling and you understand he's struggling. Give them a call and just say, how are you? Send them something like a takeaway. Cost you $10, $15 for a takeaway these days through Uber. You can do so many things to make someone happy. That will trigger them to do a better something tomorrow. So my little things that I want to do is, I use this word, but I got to say it in a way that it's not managing the day. Managing the day, what you want to do. Because a lot of people don't have the focus of managing your day. Going to work, having some good food. Good food is not rich food. It's about what you enjoy eating. Are you drinking enough water? Are you getting enough sleep? Are you in touch with people? So these, if you have these little things around you, your mental health is generally good. That means you're doing the right things in life. But if you don't get enough sleep, if you're addicted to drinking or any other something, so you're taken away just for a short time for a happiness, then you come back to a worse situation. So my personal story, Charles, I'm specialized in cup of tea. I enjoy a cup of tea. I just have a glass of red whenever I want it. But there's nothing more than that. If I want, I can get drunk, but I don't really go that far. So for anyone who's looking for a peace, it's about managing the day, having the food that you like, that you enjoy. And also, maybe sometimes I just share this for certain people, your wardrobe makes a massive difference. Wardrobe clean up. Take away all the clothes that you don't wear. Make sure that whenever you go out, you put the best dress on, best clothes on, because you might not see tomorrow. So I always think this moment got to be very, very special. Today is very special. Today I'm talking to you for the first time. It's a very special day for me. So I think people should understand we should be ready and be quick every moment that whatever may come, we should be able to handle that. So dressing up is very important for me. I think I've seen you, Charles, you are one of those advocates. You dress up so well. I think people should at least do it what you have. I don't say go and spend a lot of money, but with what you have, dress up well and just be prepared for something good, because you will get, when you feel that you are ready to receive, you will get. So if you're not ready to receive, you won't get. So all the time, your mental health is about so many different characters, and then you feel good. You need to have a haircut. You need to go for a walk. You need to drink a couple of liters of water. This little thing that will make you happy. Do this for 4 weeks. Trust me, your moods will change. You will have a new life. You will be very pumped to talk to someone because your energy levels are high. So you don't have to have a drink or anything else. So those are the things that I can recommend anyone who might be going through something, maybe something small, something that they don't know. They feel very, very low all the time. Just do this one. And also, if you want to be happy, call someone and maybe ask them whether they need any help. I think that's one of the things. I just call randomly people and ask them they need help. So they all need help, and I help them, and that makes me happy. So if I'm really going through a tough time, what I do is I'll help someone else, and that makes me happy, and I'm back again in life.
Oh, Virosh, that's such wonderful, wonderful advice. I have written down everything that you have shared. I urge listeners to re-listen to what Virosh shared with you. I'll say it again. Bureau says, manage your day. Be careful. Watch what you eat. Drink enough water. Clean up your wardrobe. Look the best you can possibly look. Be ready to receive something good. Call someone, and if you're feeling low, call someone and ask them if they need help, and that will make you happy. Oh, that's gold. Well done, my friend. Well done. That's beautifully said. And dear listeners, I assure you, every time I see Viroš, he is beautifully dressed. So I congratulate you on following your own advice. It reminds me of a story of people who are counselors often, or who, you know, presenters, like professional speakers like I am, but they give advice, but they don't follow their own advice. And Viroš, you certainly do. Now, as we're talking about sharing ideas on people changing their lives, education, you know, you said you had been running education programs on business for people in Melbourne. Has that been on Melbourne or globally? And secondly, can you share some thoughts that you have about what is a good education?
Okay. Again, a good question, Charles. Education at the moment, I find it's in limbo. Some of them, not everything. A lot of people study, and that's not relevant for their work. I've heard so many people, especially executive MBAs, they pay about $110,000, and they cannot find a job after that. Some of the kids, they spend 4 years or 5 years degree, business degree, they cannot find a job. So education means, if you go to a university, lecturers just come and do the lecture. It's their obligation. They pick the time. I walked in, I walked out. Okay, just go and do everything by yourself. So education, I see there's a massive gap. The next generation is very lost. Not everyone, but I see our responsibility is to make sure that they have a better system. And I see that is deteriorating from us. So education is, I think, it's about life skills. If you go and put me in a jungle, I'll come home. If you go and put a young guy in a jungle, they will not come home. That's education for me.
Stop there. That's a beautiful idea. If someone is educated, you can put them into a jungle and they will come home. But an ineffective education, they would not come home. Very good. Keep going. That's a lovely, lovely metaphor.
So what I see is the future of this country, especially, I love this country. I will die for this country. The system got to be changed. Life skills, something small, just about communication skills. How can I talk to someone nicely? How can I listen to you nicely? Those two skills are not their reading skills. Actually, if you look at it, a lot of people can't read, a lot of people can't write, a lot of people can't communicate. And you have the masters and the degrees. I'll tell you honestly, all the PhDs and the doctors cannot put the theory into practice. They have all the theory, but there's no one is there to execute the theory. So the basic thing that we a problem we have is we don't give enough for reading, writing, listening, and then people skills. Charles, when I see you, I come to you and just say, hello, Charles. How many people do that? 80%, they are so shy or they have something that they cannot connect with people. So this world is seriously falling apart on these skills. And that's why we don't have a community anymore. We need to bring this back. We need a leader in this country to bring Australia back. And I'm telling you, I'm a migrant, and I'm more Australian than most of the people who are born here. And if you don't do that, it's pretty late. Now, you're asking me education. You're teaching so much executive MBA, but they cannot put into practice. What education system is that?
Yes.
And you also bring a lot of international students. It's a business and a mafia, and that's not education for me too. I really think
yes.
if, really interested in this system. I mean, this is just a comparison. When I think of Oxford, the place is amazing. You want to go and spend the whole day there. We have Melbourne Uni, we have Monash Uni. Nobody wants to come and even have a coffee at Monash Uni. There's no place for them to go and be that person. So education is not only education, it's a lifestyle. If you think of Oxford, people say, oh, I want to go to Oxford. What about us? Have you said that? Forget about all these major degrees. It's not relevant. Most of them just use only 5% of their study at the, throughout the program. 5 to 10%. Actually, we have a problem. We're not addressing it. It's, the universities are good at making money, not giving something to the students. And that's the truth.
That's a lovely distinction, Vidos. And we'll come back to that. Universities are good at making money, but not educating students. We've got to go for a short break. I'm with Vidos Pereira. You're on the Mind Medicine Program with Charles Coves.
Are you ready for a global tax on your airline flying? There's one catch. It doesn't apply to private jets.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The Washington Post is touting a report calling for a global tax on commercial flying, but not private jets, would require a global centralized system to track passports. Wow, that sounds fantastic. The report from the International Council on Clean Transportation recommends a frequent flyer tax that starts the second flight each person takes per year. If you fly enough, you could reach $177 for your single flight. Remember, in a declared climate emergency, you may only be able to fly once every 3 years unless morally justified. Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Hollywood celebrities, world leaders, corporate leaders, United Nations officials, all exempt from this as private jet travel will not be impacted. Welcome to the Great Reset 2022. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
For decades, senior government and intergovernmental organization officials have peddled fear with climate change alarmism. In June 1989, Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Program, said that governments had a 10-year opportunity to arrest the greenhouse effect before it went beyond human control. He claimed that entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the warming trend was not stabilized by the year 2000. In reality, global carbon dioxide emissions from fossil fuels and industry were 62% higher in 2021 than in 1989, and sea level has barely changed.
Brian Stelter and Liz Cheney gone in the same week.
And that's just the start of draining the entire swamp.
Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Mind Medicine Program. I'm Charles Coves, your host, Australasia's passion provocateur, and my guest in the second hour of today's program is Vidos Pereira. We're talking about being happy, about being peaceful, about mental health, about education, about Sri Lanka. And when we went for a break, Vidos, and it's wonderful to have you, you were talking that universities in Australia, and particularly here in Melbourne, are good at making money, but they're not very good at giving an education. Let's unpack that a little bit, your views on that.
Some listeners might get offended, but that's the truth. Okay. So if you look at a degree program, some degree programs are 4 years. Most of them, if you map the jobs that it's out there in the market, it's very different from what you study now. So my story is, I think, I don't know, we all have to be mindful. I mean, it's our children. And no one questioning them. We just put them in the uni, and that's it. We make sure that they will do the degree. We don't ask why this degree and why this option is not available. So there's no life skills, there's no listening skills. They're still short of something, and they continue to do it. And university is not interested in giving you what more than they have agreed on that framework. So they're like, they charge the money, whether students study or not, doesn't care. If you're late, they'll charge you more. If you don't pass, they charge you more. So it's a business. University is not interested in making people a better citizen in the global, and or better global citizen. They have some programs just to show that they are doing something. But I think if you want this country, especially Australia, built on certain culture, culture means it's a different mindset and different lifestyle. That's not been driven by the universities. It's becoming very financial driven. So the mindset of kids also going to be very financial driven. You only associate friends if you have money, if you have the PhD, or if you have a sports car. What happened to Australia? Where's this culture? Where are we heading from this point onwards? So if you want to see a better future, Australian values, where I saw 25 years ago, we don't see that anymore. It's all about business. And that level, we cannot sustain this education system. I hear all the major universities is selling the degree to international students. They can be wherever they are. They can run wherever, they can follow the program, which is a degree or master's, online, pay the same fee, and get the master's or degree from wherever they are. So I said, what's the point? We're having an education system that then they don't have that hands-on experience of an Australian education system. They can study in their own country. They can do their own program. But it is just become a business. There's no value in it. So I seriously think, yes, of course, country needs money. Education system needs money. But we need to do something beyond what we are doing. I just don't want to sell the certificate or the degree to another country. That's the value that we are creating. You can be an Australian graduate. What's the difference? There's no difference. What is the difference that we are thinking about? Nothing. So I think education got to be, oh my God, it had to be a big transformation on this system. Otherwise, we will have a massive problem very, very soon. It is already their problem, but we cannot move forward in life.
Yes, you explain it very well, because if universities are run as a business and on financial principles, then that's what the students get. And I have a professor friend of mine at La Trobe University, another university in Melbourne, and many lecturers these days, they come into the lecture room and they don't even have students there, Virosh. You know, the students can't even be bothered coming into the classroom, and they turn off their Zooms, and they, you know, they might be home in their pajamas. But the lecturer is lecturing to an empty room, and he's got a camera on him, and the students are having remote learning, as precisely as you say. But where is the interaction? Where is the ability to learn from their colleagues? It has disappeared.
Disappeared. So, Charles, I think it's a massive topic we need to talk about. We need to address this. Otherwise, it will be too late. It's driven by people who have different ideologies. And I feel sorry for the people who are studying and then they're not getting the best out of it. They are paying the money. They are getting into debt, thinking this is the gold mine. It's not gold anymore. Not even silver, not even bronze for me. It's worthless. There's no value.
Yes, I look back at my university days. I got an honours degree in law from Melbourne University in the early 1970s, and then at Monash University, I got a master's degree in law in the late 1970s. And the interaction I had with my fellow students was such a joy. It was such a wonderful thing. All right, so thank you for sharing that. I'd like to move on to share with us what's happening to Sri Lanka, and I'll ask from this perspective. I see that China, the Chinese Communist Party, we say China, but in fact it's the Chinese Communist Party that runs it. And of course, communism in China is a different communism to the Russian communism that my parents left Hungary for. There are certain freedoms in China. If you do what the regime wants, you've got enormous freedom in China. But China lent large amounts of money to Sri Lanka, and I don't see any good news coming out of Sri Lanka. What's your information from your Sri Lankan community, and being a publisher for 17 years of a Sri Lankan newspaper, I'm hoping you can give me a good feel, because I have a lot of Sri Lankan friends.
It was a death trap for us. We mean, there's a lot of factors into the story. The government, especially the people who are running the country, it's the same team for the last 20 years probably. Yeah, nothing's been changed. They changed the brand, you know, only the surface, and bring different story to the... So it's a very political debate. I just don't want to go on that part because I cannot finish the conversation. But okay. Loans were given without even doing a feasibility studies, given loan and assigning them for 6-7%. Normally, government can't pay 6-7% interest rate. And they have got so much of loans. Our foreign reserves went down to about $1 billion. Normally, we have to have at least $10-15 billion. So I'm not sure of the real statistic. So we don't have money to buy things from overseas. That means to bring petrol from overseas, we don't have the money. We don't have the dollars. So because of the money is not there, petrol is not there, the whole cycle collapsed. And they got rid of one president and got another guy to run. I don't want to comment on these people, but it's not a solution. We need a solution that will take the country to the next level. It's not about changing politicians, because the system that we have is, tomorrow China come and say, okay, we'll give you another $2 billion. Can you sign? They'll sign. Because they are so vulnerable, they just want money. But we don't have a strategy or a plan to take Sri Lanka forward. So Sri Lanka actually struggling without a proper leader. And then I see again here, it's very similar. We had great leaders. Today is just, I don't want to comment again. I see that's why the things are all over the place. Our roads are not done here. Our health system is crippled. Trains are not running properly. Same problem. What I've seen in Sri Lanka is happening here. Not that we are running the country, but the people who have taken over the responsibility is not doing it. They are signing all the major projects. That means Westgate Bridge, those tunnels, everything, all big projects. Same thing happened in Sri Lanka. Our roads are good, but we don't have petrol. So there is a situation of the thing is, we will have the roads, but again, economy. What are we injecting to the economy is the most important part. I saw something. Our debt of Victoria is about putting Queensland, Sydney and Tasmania put together, there's about 100 billion. We have about 150 billion debt. So, I mean, I see we need to fix these things. Sri Lanka have gone through, and I see the same thing will happen here if we don't address it.
Yes, you expressed that well. In Sri Lanka, the roads are good, but we have no petrol. You mentioned leadership for education. You mentioned leadership for Sri Lanka. You are a leader in multicultural communities in Victoria, and you are involved in the political process. Why are you? Tell our listeners how you have chosen to be involved in the political process here in Australia.
Yeah, political process is just the title I was given. I'm a community champion. I started my journey, as I told you, as an altar server. So I continue to serve people. Anyone who comes for help, I just help them. I do have the knowledge, the network to do it. So I don't need a title. But the liberalism, small business, families, religion, certain values that I quite enjoy in the Liberal Party. So that's why I got involved with that. But I'm sorry, can you repeat the question again, Charles? I just missed the point.
Yeah, so you are involved with the Liberal Party. What is your vision? What do you want to do in politics through the Liberal Party here in Australia? And you know, I joined the Liberal Party. I've been a president of a branch for a number of years. I've been chairman of a state electorate conference. I've been secretary of a federal electorate conference, and I must say, I've made a decision that the current Liberal Party does not deserve my time because it's not sticking to values. And you mentioned values, and I think values are such a crucial element to the success of a country. And if the major political parties ignore their values, then we're in big trouble, like Sri Lanka.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Charles, again, going back, the quality people, 20% of the quality people is surrounded by 80% people don't have a clue. So whenever we want to do something, just think about education, changing education system. Who talks about it? No one talks about it. They're happy to go and pay the money and study. So I see that the reality, the people who want to make a difference are not in the right place. When we want to make a difference, they have lots of objections and there's a lot of opposition on that. So whether it's Liberal Party or I see every party, I mean, I see this very regularly. They are still looking for candidates. They are still launching candidates for the state election, which I see is about 4 weeks or 5 weeks away. I don't think political parties should run a business like that. Political candidates should be launched 2-3 years. They have to work hard for their seat. They're not here for a marketing campaign just to put a candidate and run the show. So I see there's so much, it's wasting time. It's fooling the people. I want everyone to wake up and see they are not given the proper understanding of the party. They only say, hey, listen, we will give you $300. We'll give you more tax. What's that bullcrap? I seriously think they're fooling people by saying, okay, we'll give you extra tax, 2% tax. You have the right to ask the question from everyone, but no one asks. No one is interested. So actually, Charles, it's fault of you and me. If we are so passionate, we should still go and box with them. But sometimes we also get tired because we also have to have a life for ourselves. Otherwise, there's no life for me. So I agree, just things are not in place. And I can see that very clearly. But changing this culture, you and me cannot do it. It just need a massive change, massive overhaul. If this don't happen, another 10 to 15 years time, Charles, please write this note down and we can talk again. You will see this country will be in such a big mess. It's already, I see, big mess. They are covering up all the lies that they have done. They will go, current state government will go one day. But I see we don't have a plan. No one got a plan. They are all just coming for a maybe like a little feast, like you're going to Disneyland. Go there and go and enjoy and then come home. That's it.
Viros, I totally agree with you. We've come almost to the top of the hour. I've written your prediction down. I agree with you. Unless things change, Melbourne and Australia will be in a big mess. There's uncontrolled debt. And the lack of interest by people is problematic. That's why I'm doing this program, hosting this program on TNT Radio. I urge you to share this radio station, Viros, with your multicultural community. We need to have this dialogue. Thank you so much for sharing your wonderful insights. I have written copious notes. I will have you back as a guest again, and you and I will have a cup of tea and coffee and a glass of red to explore these ideas. Thank you so much for joining me on TNT Radio today.
Thank you so much for having me. Such a great honor. And also, whoever's listening, good luck. Make sure that if you have any issues, through Charles, we are here to help you. You don't have to know us, but we are there to help you.
Ask for help. Thank you. I'm Charles Covez for Mind Medicine Australia, Mind Medicine Program. Bye for now.